How about a little hope, encouragement, faith, some upbuilding stories in the midst of the storm?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
How about a little gospel encouragement today? You know, if we keep looking at all the bad news around us, it can be overwhelming. So we don't stick our head in the sand, but we look at the bad news around us, and then we look up. We look up at the goodness of God. We look up at hope and faith and truth in the face of Jesus, in the face of the cross, in the face of the resurrection. And then we encourage one another with testimonies of the good things that God is doing in the midst of the crisis, in the midst of the storm. If you have my book, When the World Stops, which just came out a few weeks back, but if you have that book, you know I start off in the first chapter. It's called Fear Not. So the encouragement that God is with us and therefore we have no reason to fear. But then the second chapter is Feed Your Faith, Not Your Fears. How do you overcome fear? How do you grow strong in faith? How do you become confident in God? One thing is to encourage one another with testimony. What God's done, answers to prayer, things we've seen of the faithfulness of God, what people are doing to bring about change. That brings encouragement and that spurs us on that we too can be agents of change. So in a moment, I'm going to be joined by Steve Ugin. Steve is based in Minneapolis, so he's been right in the thick of the crisis there. Steve is based in Minneapolis, but he leads a movement called Firebase Movement. They have branches, active branches, Minneapolis, Los Angeles, New York, Detroit, Dallas, San Francisco, Chicago. And the Firebase Movement is a network of U.S.-based missionaries, local churches, and houses of prayer that have joined together to see day and night worship and prayer raised up to fuel the Great Commission and to see the church empowered and equipped to engage our culture with the gospel unto the return of Jesus. And the three primary mandates that they function are, one, build the altar, two, reach the lost, three, disciple the family. So Steve has been out there on the front lines in Minneapolis. I believe he's traveled to some other cities as well. And what he's done over the years, let's say there's a major gay pride event, and the Gay Pride Month or something, that they'll have day and night prayer and worship going on and then seek to go right in the midst of everything that's going on and share the good news of Jesus, share the love of God. And I spoke at a conference for them, met privately with Steve, spent good time with him, saw his heart, and he does have a heart of compassion. And he shared something in a video. I watched it yesterday. I said, man, we got to get you on the air. Now, The bottom half of the hour, we're going to be joined by Ken Pounders. Ken is a former drug addict who leads a ministry in Alabama that has helped many, many get free from drugs and different kinds of addictions. And it's just good to hear this, that Jesus sets people free in the midst of all the chaos, in the midst of the ongoing crises in which we live. You know, we just had a virtual graduation at Fire School of Ministry. So we're completely online now, but this would have been an in-person graduation, our last one with our physical school, but we had to do it virtually. And there was one gentleman who was the valedictorian, just edged out one other student by like 1/100th of a point, was chosen to be the student speaker and just brought a powerful, wonderful, clear word. What I didn't realize, though, was that he checked into that ministry in Alabama in 2015, just 5 years ago as a drug addict. So he must have been out of there for a couple of years. And then, as he got out, came into our school and was with us for 3 years. And I think, wow, God really changes lives. All right, to the front lines in Minneapolis, Steve, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be with you, Dr. Brown.
So please tell our listeners what you've been doing right in the epicenter of this national crisis right now.
Well, we have, you know, I was on a media fast for the last month or so and a Facebook fast, so I didn't even understand what was really happening, even in my own city. And I got a call from a friend in New York City, a leader in New York, who kind of his calling from God is to, you know, move into these types of situations and speak peace and release the kingdom, much like ours, but, you know, more on a media level and a leader level. And he called me and said, I'm going to be in Minneapolis Friday, you know, let's go. And I said, let's go what? And I started to look at the news and realized, wow, there's riots going on in my city. The city is literally burning. And so I went down with him into the area that had been probably the most torn up in South Minneapolis and just walked the streets, and it was like a war zone. And I just began to feel the heart of God and felt like the Lord said, I want you to bring the kingdom in the middle of this. And so we've felt he wanted us to build an altar to establish night and day worship and prayer in the middle of this, because of course this is a spiritual battle. It's not even necessarily an ideological battle as much as it's a spiritual battle. And the primary way the Lord has trained us to shift spiritual atmospheres is to create a dwelling place for him. And so that's already started. That started yesterday at 4 o'clock and is going to continue until this breaks. And then from that place, go out and actually demonstrate the kingdom and preach the gospel. That's our heart. So that's what we're doing.
Now, Steve, as you were praying about this, you saw something, got an internal vision that involved your son and the killing of George Floyd. Watching you share it on the video was obviously very emotional for you to share it, but it drilled something home, because it's always somebody else's pain, somebody else's suffering, somebody else's neighborhood, somebody else's problem. But when we internalize it and think in terms of our own lives, it becomes overwhelming. So what happened with you? What did you see in your spirit?
Well, I had been out on Saturday in the midst of the riots, and I realized that a lot of it, I mean, there's obviously a mixture of different people groups there. There's certainly the African-American community out and experiencing pain and grieving. There's white, you know, there's anarchist groups kind of mixed in with that, just exploiting the situation and trying to, you know, take it in a negative, destructive direction. Then there's just a lot of young people that were out there. And a lot of them kind of spectators, you know, kind of in the middle of this war zone, thinking it's novel, taking selfies, not even so much caught up in the issues. And so, you know, that night, my primary purpose wasn't to go and preach the gospel, although we got to share Jesus with many people on the streets, because they're just sheep without a shepherd. I mean, literally, they're lost, and they're looking for where do we really find justice. And so as I came home that next day, I was in, you know, my time with the Lord, and I was just like, God, give me your heart for this situation. There's so many narratives swirling around. There's so many voices kind of speaking around this situation. What do you have to say? And I prayed that, and then I was in worship. And as I was in worship, the Lord just I just began to have a vision as I was in worship before the Lord. And the vision was I saw my son, Judah. He's my youngest. He's 12 years old, and he was on the street, and there was a police officer's knee. I didn't see a face necessarily. I just knew it was a police officer. Someone in authority had his knee in his neck. And my son was struggling for breath. And as I was seeing this, the Lord just let me start to feel the emotion of it. And I began to realize that it wasn't, obviously, I was having personal emotion because this is my son. I was feeling these feelings. I'm like, oh my God in heaven. And then I began to feel the Lord's heart. And the Lord said to me, I'm showing you this because George Floyd is my son. And this happened to him, and I'm grieved about this. And it was so emotional because it was like getting you know, being able to touch the father's heart in the middle of this situation. And I didn't have that before that moment. Mm. And I feel like we need that as the church. We need to see this as a how this affects the father's heart issue. So that was the first vision. And then I had a second vision. And this vision, I was actually preaching to the crowds at the riot. And my son was there. And I mean, obviously, this is horrible. But I was preaching and saying, hey, I know this incredible injustice has been done. Basically, take it out on my son. I mean, those words came out in this vision. I would never want that ever to happen. But one by one, I just felt the Lord was, again, trying to take me into his heart. One by one, the crowd came up and just started kicking my son Judah, punching him in the face, spitting on him until he's just a lifeless body. Mm. And then all of a sudden, the crowd dispersed. And then the revelation hit my heart. This is actually what the Father has done for this situation. He literally sent Christ to take the pain of this injustice upon himself on that cross. Obviously, he also took it for sin, but he also took people's, you know, anger upon himself on the cross as well. And so I was like, in that moment, I knew the cross was the solution to this. So we're supposed to have compassion, but I also feel like we need to go to the crowds and go and speak into the pain and go, Jesus is justice. Jesus is justice. He's the only justice that we're ever really going to have in this situation. And of course, you know, the cross is where forgiveness, you know, injustice, justice, sin, redemption, they all meet in that place. And so I just felt like those were the two clear words for us. It's like, this hurts the Father's heart when there's injustice like this, but there's been provision made for it on the cross, and the church needs to be in the middle of it.
Yeah, and Steve, that's what you've done in other situations, and now you and your team and others in different cities they're ready. They've been living this. Now it's a matter of stepping out. I want to spend a few more minutes with Steve on the other side of the break and just find out what he's encountering on the streets. He was out till about midnight last night on the streets of Minneapolis. So let's just find out what kind of reception he's getting and what he feels it's going to take to change the spiritual atmosphere, because ultimately, the spirit of violence and chaos and anger, this violent anger, it's from below, not from above. It must be overcome spiritually. You can't just overcome it with force, although you push back. There must be a spiritual solution. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Check out firebasemovement.com. I'm speaking with Steve Ugen. If you're looking for him, it's U-G-G-E-N. And Steve, as you've been on the front lines where things may be as volatile as anywhere in America right now, what are you and your team encountering, and how are they receiving you and your message?
Well, it's interesting because there's different people groups out there. As I mentioned, you know, there's a lot of young people, mm-hmm. and I think they're really open. They don't know the answer. You know, it was interesting. I had one of my friends, actually, we were in the middle of the riot on Saturday night, and my friend Demas from New York, we had amplified sound out on the street, and they had organized a rally. There were maybe 2,000 or 3,000 protesters kind of gathered in this area. And he said, hey, I've got better, and they had a horrible sound system. He said, I think I have better sound than you, but I want to be able to pray for the crowd. And so literally the organizer invited him up onto the platform, and he got to pray and just call the peace of Christ down into the middle of this gathering. He gets done, and the organizer turns to him and goes, we've never done this before. Can you give us some wisdom or counsel? And he was able to just begin to share story after story of how when people in other cities and other crisis situations have cried out to God, God has come and brought peace and brought true justice into the situation. So, I mean, just incredible. I feel like they're sheep without a shepherd. They're really waiting for someone to come. I mean, what you've got here is basically generations of fatherlessness, and then you have a spark of injustice, and, you know, they just rise up in rebellion. But when you come with the Father's love and his message and begin to bring understanding to them, they're very open. They're very open. So we've prayed with many people. We've seen healings on the streets. Another people group that we see out there, of course, is the community that this has impacted. You know, the neighborhoods, the neighbors have been just completely terrorized by the random violence and burning. Again, I think primarily coming from the Antifa anarchist groups, you know, that are just less concerned about George Floyd and racial justice than they are just in creating anarchy and chaos and fear. You know, the scriptures, of course, tell us the spirit of, you know, the spirit of lawlessness is going to try and break in these last days. So going door to door and ministering to people and just saying, hey, the church is here. God is on the throne. We're praying. I was out on my outreach last night. Actually, the streets were pretty clear, at least on the Minneapolis side. It seems like with the National Guard coming in, there's a little more order. Even though there's lots of stuff still going on in the city. But we were walking on the street and walked up on a Mexican shop owner and a young man who was loading bullets into his gun because of the lack of police presence in some areas. You know, individual shop owners have said that they feel like they need to protect their own property. And so there's kind of this vigilante, like, that's the other group, is vigilante business owners, you know, that have just been totally impacted by this. And so we sat down and we just began a conversation with this young man and started to ask questions. And we found that as we do the ministry of listening, this is a huge compassion ministry of Christ. As you listen to what's in their hearts, you know, the scriptures say, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You begin to hear and see what's keeping them from the kingdom. So we listened to this young man's story, you know, a dad, you know, his grandpa ran the store, so he was there helping him, but he struggled with drugs. All of his friends, he said, are out burning stuff. And he's like, I know that's not right, but I don't know which way to go. And we began to share our testimonies, share the gospel with him. We spent probably 45 minutes with this one young man, and he ended up gloriously surrendering his life to Christ.
Praise
got
God.
got filled with the Holy Spirit. I mean, those kinds of, it's a one-on-one. It's like one heart at a time. That's how we bring transformation. That's really how I think the church needs to respond to this, is just get out there and be salt and light, you know, on the streets right now.
Yeah, and Steve, you when you mentioned the fatherlessness and sheep without a shepherd and all of this, and then the fear and business owners concerned for their well-being and so on, I am reminded, being a product of the 60s in terms of my drugs and rebellion before I was saved, and then a product of the Jesus People movement in the early 70s when I got saved, that God was moving in the midst of the rebellion, the sin, the shaking, the division. People are saying we haven't had a year like this since 1968. And really, in many ways, this exceeds 68. But we can see the outward, and it's grievous. It's ugly. It's wrong. But then we have to see from a spiritual perspective and recognize that the harvest is extraordinarily, extraordinarily ripe. So
totally.
Yeah. Steve, one last thing. If folks want to find out what you're doing or try to replicate this in their own city, should they go to firebasemovement.com? Is that the best thing to do?
That's a great spot to go, but I would give them probably our Love Twin City site. That's the one we're kind of actively updating right now, and you can get there through the Firebase site.
Okay.
But that's lovetc247.com, lovetc247.com. If they sign up, we'll communicate with them about what's going on in the street and how they could get involved and help out.
So Love TC is in Twin Cities 24/7, is in 24/7 prayer and worship. Hey, Steve, keep up the great work. Keep us posted, and we will stand together to see God's Spirit rise up in this country. God bless, man, and be safe.
God bless you. Thank you, brother. Bye-bye.
All right. God bless. Yeah, and yeah, but just getting a couple of comments. I understand that a business owner trying to protect their own business, they wouldn't be functioning as a vigilante. I understand that. But thank God being out there on the front lines. Now, here, I want to play something for you, the remarks of President Trump yesterday. And then I want to add something to this. So my reason for playing this is to go back to what Steve is talking about. All right. So President Trump identified himself yesterday, just a short clip, as the law and order president. Let's listen.
I will fight to protect you. I am your president of law and order and an ally of all peaceful protesters.
All right. Then President Trump explained that he's basically going to bring in the military. He's encouraging governors to do it. And if you don't, I will. He's basically saying, now, again, I'm playing this because I want to go back to what Steve had to say. Let's listen.
I am taking immediate presidential action to stop the violence and restore security and safety in America. I am mobilizing all available federal resources, civilian and military, to stop the rioting and looting, to end the destruction and arson, and to protect the rights of law-abiding Americans, including your Second Amendment rights. Therefore, the following measures are going into effect immediately. First, we are ending the riots and lawlessness that has spread throughout our country. We will end it now. Today, I have strongly recommended to every governor to deploy the National Guard in sufficient numbers that we dominate the streets. Mayors and governors must establish an overwhelming law enforcement presence until the violence has been quelled. If a city or state refuses to take the actions that are necessary to defend the life and property of their residents, then I will deploy the United States military and quickly solve the problem for them.
All right. The president needs to make a strong statement and back it with force in the face of anarchy. You have to. You cannot have anarchy, chaos. And ask the communities that are being ravaged. Ask the business owners that are losing their businesses. Ask the people that are being shot or being mauled. Ask them. There was a Las Vegas policeman, I believe in Las Vegas. Someone came up to him, shot him in the back of the head last night. As of earlier today, he was in life support or in critical condition. There's no possible justification for this, as we've said over and over and over. And the only language that anarchists and violent protesters, rioters, will understand is force on the one hand. Even Governor Cuomo, by the way, blasted Mayor de Blasio in New York, saying he did a lousy job protecting the city last night. He said, I have the power to displace you. Wow. That was Governor Cuomo to Governor de Blasio. You talk about things breaking down. There's no reason to allow people to loot and destroy and attack. No reason. However, that will not solve the deeper problems. Let the government do what it must do to reestablish order. Let the police or National Guard or military do what needs to be done to reestablish order. But it's only the church that can get to people's hearts and bring a message of repentance and a message of reconciliation and a message of hope and a message of transformation, and a message of forgiveness. And it's only by prayer and by the Holy Spirit that we can see deeper change come. So let the government do what it does, but the church must do its job. This is an extraordinary opportunity. We may never see the harvest this ripe for people to hear the gospel for many years to come. Let's seize the moment. And we have the message that will set the captives free, that will bring people hope in the midst of the chaos, and working together we can work for justice and reconciliation. Friends, let's seize the moment.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Father's Day, 1995, God used a former drug addict named Steve Hill to ignite revival in Pensacola, Florida, that church historians have called the longest-lasting or longest-running local church revival in American history. Steve Hill and I were dear friends, had the joy of serving together, but we didn't know each other before we were saved in our drug days. Steve had been a drug addict. He was in prison. A man named Jim Summers brought him out of prison into his discipleship ministry to help young men overcome drug addiction. And Steve came out of that with flying colors and ended up being greatly used by God for many years before he went home to be with the Lord a few years ago. Jim Summers also got another man out of jail named Ken Pounders, also a drug addict. Ken and I have had the joy of working together for years at Fire School of Ministry, but I didn't know Ken in his drug days. I've only known him as evangelist, ministry leader, man of God, Ken Pounders, but he has a remarkable story as well. And in the midst of the craziness and chaos of the days in which we're living, I want to take some time to encourage you with the power of God to transform lives. So, Ken Pounders, director of OMA, which is, I'll let Ken tell us what OMA stands for. Ken, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Yeah, OMA. OMA is what we go by, but it's Outreach Ministries of Alabama.
Yeah, I had the Ministries of Alabama, and I blanked out. I immediately thought of Operation. I thought, no, it's not Operation. Outreach Ministries of Alabama. Ken, what were you doing in jail when Jim Summers, who became your father-in-law ultimately, what were you doing in jail at that time?
Well, I was facing multiple drug charges, kind of a situation that had piled up where I would get arrested and I would get out and then arrested again, and I was in a lot of trouble. Finally went to court and was sentenced to 5 years in the Alabama State Penitentiary, and then the judge, in one sweeping motion, said, I'm going to give you an opportunity. And she said she would suspend my sentence and let me go to Outreach Ministries of Alabama.
All right. So how old were you at that time, Ken?
I was 20 years old.
20 years old. So you're already a convict, basically, or on your way to long-term prison.
Yeah, I started using drugs when I was 12. And progressed pretty quickly into dealing drugs, and then started when I was about 15, getting into a lot of trouble. And so, you know, in and out of jail, and the first few times they kind of cut you loose because you're young, and then eventually it started piling up. And then I got that opportunity, and you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I knew I didn't want to go to prison. And simultaneously, really, God had been dealing with my heart and showing me that my only hope was Christ. And so it really kind of, it's almost like he was building a catch pin, like a two-sided pin, to funnel me to where he wanted me to be.
And Ken, looking at your own upbringing, was there anything in your upbringing that opened the door for you to be doing drugs at such a young age?
You know, really, Dr. Brown, that has always been a puzzle to me because, you know, now having worked with drug addicts for years, I know that oftentimes the home environment is terrible, but mm-hmm. I actually had a really good home environment. I had two parents that loved me dearly. As a child, they tried to keep me in church and keep me on the right path. And it really seems that the reason I went after drugs was like a curiosity thing, just wanting to experiment with it, but I kind of took to it like a duck to water, whatever. It's like, I mean, as soon as I started dabbling with it, I went headlong that direction.
Mm. So you check in this ministry. At the same time, you're coming to know the Lord. You go through the program. It's a pretty rigorous program, right? Pretty much all your day is scheduled out.
Yes, extremely so.
Right. And you get transformed, and then you've been doing ministry helping others for many years now. What have you seen? What kind of results are you getting?
Well, you know, we're in this type of ministry, it's I guess the way to put it is that the good things that happen are spectacular. The bad things that happen are spectacular also, in a negative sort of way. So,
yeah.
There's occasionally you got a guy that just completely crashes and burns. In fact, we had a young man a couple years ago that I had worked with for almost 3 years that started back using and very quickly overdosed on, a heroin shot with fentanyl in it.
Mm.
Of course, that's crushing. But, you know, when that happened, I remember sitting that morning when I got the news, I was sitting on the edge of my bed and basically thinking, what's the use? Why do I even do what I do? And then the Lord brought to mind a young man that had went through the program simultaneously with that other guy. And that young man's name was Skylar Linderman, and you know Skylar.
Yeah.
Because after he went through our program here, I took him on as an intern here, and then we sent him to Fire School of Ministry. And, you know, Skylar's back here working with us now, married with his first child on the way, and just it's amazing to see what God has done in his life. And then I've got young men all around the world that today they're making a difference on this planet because they've laid hold of Christ and have went after him with all their heart. It can be, at times, really difficult, but then other times it's so gratifying to see how God takes somebody that's a hopeless case and absolutely turns their life around.
And, Ken, it's amazing when you meet people that you've known for years in the Lord, only to find out about their background. My testimony from LSD to PhD, right? Steve used to spark revival in Pensacola, and here he is, drug addict and in jail. Again, I've only known the evangelist Ken Pounder's side, and Ken Pounder's leading outreach ministries of Alabama. I've only known that side of you. I've ministered with people I've known for years and found out, you were doing this.
Yeah.
It's so shocking. Jesus really changes people. Even with Skylar that you just mentioned, who was a student speaker at graduation, the virtual graduation we just had this past Saturday, and valedictorian by like 1,000th or 100th of a point, amazingly. And I had no clue. I mean, if I knew it, I not had it in my head that it was just 2015. He checked into your program. You think that he's been walking with the Lord for, his whole life and all this. So it is amazing to see how Jesus changes people. And Ken, that must give you hope. It's agonizing when you have these losses, as you mentioned. But when you see these people checking in and families bringing them and everything seems so hopeless, there must be a little bit of a smile in you knowing, hey, I've seen what Jesus can do.
Yeah, and you know what? Just recently in prayer, I felt like the Lord stirred my heart once again that we don't know who's with us right now, and we don't know what they're going to do. There may be another Steve Hill here right now, another Skylar Linderman, a young man that's going to be completely turned around and go out and make a difference. And it's not just, it's not only the guys that, like me and Steve and Skylar, that go out into full-time ministry. But there's other young men that, there's a guy that I get with at least once a month that went through this program a decade ago, and he runs a big construction firm and loves his family and, is generous with his local church. You get those guys that they're out there working a job and they're not in full-time ministry, but their lives are transformed and they're making a difference for the kingdom. And, so that's, it's really, really what it's all about.
So the program lasts for 12 months?
It does.
All right.
12 months, and it's residential. They come live here.
All right. And how many men do you have in the program right now?
Well, right now, we just, we just started taking guys again because...
Okay. So before the crisis.
Well, generally, we try to keep our number, we like it at 10 to 12 guys. I don't take a lot of guys because we are actually one-on-one discipling them.
Wow.
And, I mean, I've got buddies that have ministries like this, and they've got 40 or 50 guys, and they're doing a good work, but they're doing a different work than what we're doing, because we really try to make this an intensive, not quite one-on-one, but like one-on-two, so to speak, of intensive discipleship.
Wow.
Right now, our numbers are a little down. We're taking a guy in today, and we're over the next few weeks, I want to take at least two more, and then we'll probably pause a week or two and then take a couple more after that.
All right, so give me an idea of a day in the life of one of these fellows working at OMA, coming in, fighting addiction, and he wants help. What does the day look like?
It's very disciplined. And just to be honest, when I came into this program, that was one of the things that I desperately needed. And that's true of most of my guys. They've had no discipline at all. So they're up at 5:50 in the morning. They've got a short amount of time, 15, 20 minutes to make their bed, get dressed, splash water in their face, whatever they need to do to get ready. And then they all move to our cafeteria building, and they have morning devotions, which is a private, personal devotion. They have breakfast together, and then they all have some kind of cleanup chore there at the cafeteria. Then they return to the home, and back in the men's home, they each have a chore assigned to clean that men's home that day. And by that time, you're getting close to 8 o'clock, so they go to the classroom building, and they're in classes until almost noon. They take an hour break for lunch, and then they have some work assignment. We have
now, are these Bible-based classes primarily that they'll be having in the morning?
They are. Okay. Basically, it's basic discipleship.
Got it.
We deal with some concepts of addiction, but even then, it's very much Bible-based. Like, for example, we have a class called Discerning Levels of Conflict, where we try to move from fruit down to root. And, you had the fruit of drug addiction, or you had the fruit of immorality, and then what is the root that was actually producing that fruit in your life? So really, for the most part, though, we're talking about classes like the Lordship of Christ, basics of discipleship, book studies from the Bible. So it's very much a Christ-centered and Bible-based curriculum.
All right, just going to jump in. We'll find out what happens in the afternoon and probably early evening. I got to go to sleep pretty soon. But isn't this interesting that rather than spending a tremendous amount of time dealing with psychological issues and questions of addiction and all that, which can have their place, people get immersed in knowing God, knowing His Word, walking with God, being disciples, which is the path of lasting freedom. We'll be right back.
In Shakespeare, it's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yesterday, a friend sent me a meme, which I then posted on Facebook, from Corrie Ten Boom. She said, if you look at the world, you'll be distressed. If you look within, you'll be depressed. If you look at God, you'll be at rest. And what we're doing today, in the midst of riots, in the midst of controversy, in the midst of trying to rebuild the economy, in the midst of still trying to figure out what's up with this virus, in the midst of political division, to say, let's step back and look to Jesus. And let's hear some testimonies of hope, life, strength, encouragement. So I'm speaking with Ken Pounders of Outreach. I keep going to say Operation Outreach Ministries of Alabama. Very focused program helping young men dealing with addiction. And Ken, you were there yourself getting discipled, getting set free from drugs. Now you've helped many others. Do you have any rough idea of the lasting success rate of people that have gone through the full program?
Well, it's interesting you ask that because, of course, my father-in-law, who you know well, Jim Summers, he was pretty old school when he directed this program. So all of those files are in boxes. We have just actually used this COVID-19 thing to enter all those files into a database. So hopefully I could give you a more accurate number at a later date. But I know that over the last couple of years, of guys that complete our program, we're looking at about 65% that do well, maybe even 70, but it's pretty high. Now, generally speaking, as far as attrition, we don't lose a lot of guys once I get them here, but, you know, we do occasionally lose some. Like, we had one that left because of fears of COVID, although we never even had a sniffle here.
Yeah.
But he left because of that, and then I just had a guy leave because of some medical issues that were beyond our scope of care. But if the guys that finish, the percentage is very high.
And that's been consistent with solid gospel-based discipleship programs, especially when they're led by people that used to be addicts themselves. Whereas you look at other programs and you check into the center here or rehab place here, or the government does this or that. With all the good they try to do, their numbers are very low. The gospel, true discipleship, really the answer. So what do these men do afternoon then into the early evening?
Okay, in the afternoon, they have a work assignment somewhere here on our property. And as I said, we have a 170-acre farm. We have cattle. We, of course, have plenty of grass that has to be cut and fences to be mended and all that kind of thing. In the evening, and of course, let me say about that work schedule that it's really emphasized to our staff that we're not just we're not just trying to go out and get a job done. We want to live out the gospel in front of them. And so that's as much a part of the discipleship program as the classroom is.
Wow.
And in fact, in some ways more so, because it's out there in everyday real life that you have to actually apply the things you're learning in a classroom. Then they have, of course, a dinner, and they have dinners at 5, and they have until about 7. So a couple hours of free time. But of course, during that time, they've got to get their showers, get ready for the evening activity. But you know, a lot of them will make time to do a little weightlifting or play some games or whatever. Then at 7 o'clock, they'll have some activity, and that varies evening to evening, but it's either a chapel service, a prayer meeting, or a study hall time. In the study hall, they work primarily on, they have to be reading a book from our library and doing a book report. They're working on that at all times. And they also have a portion of scripture they're memorizing. And so they have to work on one or the other during study hall.
And then lights out, what time?
Well, technically, I think lights out is 9:45. But when I look over there late in the evening, usually by 9:30, everything's dark. They're ready for bed.
Got it. So here you
got, they're going to be up at it again at 5:50.
Right. You got guys that have been partying, that have been living completely undisciplined lives. Some of them haven't cracked a book open in years, but they're desperate enough. They know they need help, and they come in this environment where everything is structured. And every program that I know similar to this can, in different parts of the country, they are super structured. There's something clearly planned out all through the day. And obviously, it's necessary for someone that's been addicted and gripped. And it must be amazing when you see them really getting free and knowing that they're free, and maybe their eyes start to light up. You must see right in front of your eyes that they start to change.
It's amazing. Yeah. It really is amazing. In fact, I just mentioned we're actually taking a guy in today, which is an all-day process. It's a intake procedure we go through. And I went in there. Of course, I always slip in and meet the new guy at some point. And just to be honest, my goodness, this guy, if I just went by what it looks like, I would say he'll never make it. But that's almost every guy.
Mm.
They come to us, they're strung out on heroin. If not heroin, it's meth. They're skinny. They just look terrible. I mean, it's just horrible. But in the space of 2 to 3 weeks, it's amazing. They're like a completely different person. I think two things are happening. Number one, the drugs are leaving their system, but even more important than that, they find Jesus, they begin to lay hold of Christ, and there's like a complete transformation spiritually, emotionally, physically. It's amazing. And literally, like I said, it's usually in about 3 weeks, I'm going, you don't even look like the guy that walked in here a few weeks ago.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of those people are pastoring churches today, some running successful businesses, some on the mission field. It's extraordinary to see Jesus changing lives. And Ken, in the midst of the chaos of our society now, it's so important that we get out a message of hope. We've just got a couple of minutes, but I've had this vision that keeps stirring inside of my heart for months now of an army of evangelists rising up all over America, preaching,
yes,
some on street corners, some under tents, some in church buildings, some one-on-one. But that's really the hope of America, the gospel spreading like holy fire across the nation. Talk to us about
that. It is. And, you know, that's one of the things here, Dr. Brown, is that I've noticed that a disproportionate number of guys that come into a program like this, they get called to ministry. And
yeah,
what's amazing about their call to ministry is not that they're for, you know, pastoral employment. They want to go out and make a difference on the planet.
Yeah. Yep.
And they want to go to the ends of the earth. And, I mean, even now I've got young guys in the program that are saying, man, I don't want to go back to what I used to be. I want to go out and change the world. And they realize the power of the gospel because they've seen the Lord at work in their own life. So you're exactly right, and I have the same vision. You know, I don't force anybody to go towards ministry, but I have a good number of guys that are saying, hey, we want to take the gospel to where it's never been before. And, you know, when I preach in a local church, which I do just about every Sunday, well, at least until, you know, all this craziness lately, but when I'm in a local church, they're good people, and I enjoy being there. But I really know that most of them are already doing what they're going to do. I mean, I'm not going to make a huge impact in their life. But when I speak to these guys, there's no telling what they're going to do. I mean, literally, I'll tell them, you know what? Japan only has 1% of their population that are Christians. And so somebody's got to take the gospel to Japan and give their life there. And I got guys that are thinking, hey, why not me?
Yeah, you know, Ken, they really get saved. It's the way it should be for everyone, that you come from darkness to light, from death to life, from damnation to salvation. And it's like, what can I do? How can I serve God? I want my life to count. And when we've had these folks come through our ministry school over the years, they've been some of the most devoted because they know what sin does. They've seen the other side. Now they want to live for God. Ken, I know, again, that you're very strict in terms of how many people you have that come in, but there could be someone listening and maybe someone they know could find tremendous help and maybe someone in the future that you're able to help. What's the best way for them to contact OMA?
Well, of course, they can give us a call, and that number is 256-778-8096. And at some point, usually family calls, but at some point I have to talk to the young man that's interested, because I'm basically going to explain this program to him and exactly what we're doing, and then he's going to have to convince me that that's the kind of help he wants.
Got it.
I'm really not interested. I mean, we're not a rescue mission, and I mean I love rescue missions, and they have their ministry.
Yep.
But I'm not just trying to get every drug addict off the street.
Got it.
I'm trying to find guys that are sick of where they're going, and they want to learn a whole new way of life.
Yeah.
And so, at some point, I've got to talk to that individual that wants help, and then we'll get them in here.
All right, one more time, give us that number.
It's area code 256-778-8096.
I can keep up the great work. God's using you, and the fruit is going to be eternally wonderful. God bless, man.
Great to talk with you.
Thanks.